There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
It is Dubai Today with me, Sally Moussa, and today we're throwing open the discussion on mental health over to you. Experts say that 20% of the UAE population is experiencing anxiety, with cases of depression on the rise. What are the day-to-day challenges that you face, and is modern life making it difficult for us to keep it all together? Do you know the signs and the symptoms of anxiety and depression, and is it something that you feel comfortable seeking professional help on, or do you still feel the stigma is too strong? We would love to hear your story. We're careful to keep any interaction with the show anonymous, if that is what you prefer. And you can call and text us now. Chastity O'Connell is back in the studio with us today. Hello, welcome, Chastity.
Hello.
Great. It's wonderful great to be have here. You.
Thank you.
Now, tell us what you've been up to over the week. I believe you gave quite an interesting presentation yesterday.
Yes, it's been a really exciting week in Dubai for mental health. Lots of fantastic initiatives, both in schools. And yesterday, we were at the Ministry of Happiness along with Hope, which is a local organization that's aimed at decreasing the stigma toward mental health. And what was interesting, we came in with talks and discussions about mental health, myths and realities, as well as how to cope with stress. It was really exciting talk. And as we got started, one of the individuals in the group said, can you define mental health for us first? And we just took a minute and we were taken aback at this reality that we talk about mental health, we talk about mental illness, and don't really give a lot of time to actually defining what it means. What does it mean to be mentally healthy?
Exactly. I mean, 25 years now we've had World Mental Health Day, right? And so you hear about it more than ever before. But actually, sometimes we do need to step back and we do need to think, okay, hold on a minute. What does that even mean when you're talking about, what are you talking about when it mental health? We all know, okay, yeah, you scratch yourself, you cut yourself, you fall over. There are symptoms, there are signs. You can see all of that. What's going on in the brain?
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. And the reality is with mental health, when we look at, you know, sort of textbook definitions, we're talking about a state of well-being. It's when an individual realizes their own potential, can cope with normal stresses of everyday life, and can work productively and fruitfully. And this is taken from the World Health Organization. What's interesting is just how expansive that definition is. It's not just about feeling relaxed or at peace. It really is about things like potential and the capacity to find meaning in life and how are you coping with stress. Again, it's not an absence of this relaxed, idyllic life. It really is about how are you coping with the ups and downs and taking into consideration that we all experience ups and downs. At the same time, it is not the absence of disease. So just because you don't have clinical depression or a clinical diagnosis of anxiety, that doesn't mean that you are functioning optimally. It doesn't mean that you are mentally healthy.
Okay. You've covered a lot of really interesting things there, Chastity. But of course, the theme this year for World Mental Health Day, which I just heard you refer to, I mean, working productively and fruitfully, this is part of what it means to be mentally healthy. And the theme this year is all about mental health in the workplace. But it just feels like there isn't a balance oftentimes. I mean, we're looking at the modern workplace where, you know, we're interconnected, we're more connected than ever before. We've got more work to deal with than ever before. It's an incredibly competitive environment oftentimes. Are we fighting a losing battle when it comes to finding that balance?
Sure. It's difficult. There's the part of you that looks at the practical realities of what it means to have a job in Dubai, in the UAE. It is extremely competitive and the expectation is high. And so I don't want to ignore that reality, that internal pressure that people feel to get it done, to be accessible at all hours of the day and all hours of the night. I was teaching lecture last week, and I asked the students, what's the first thing you look at when you wake up in the morning? What's the last thing you look at when you go to bed at night?
Your phone.
Our phone. Absolutely. Absolutely. And so the way that our smartphones have really become almost a third hand for us, it is really difficult. And so I think one of the first steps is honoring and acknowledging that it is difficult. Because the minute you start at giving advice without understanding a person's perspective, you get resistance.
Of course, you get resistance. But this is something that Are employers, are they open to that? Are they open to letting us just switch off? You know, is that something that you see a lot in your practice as a counselling, a clinical counsellor at the Human Relations Institute? Is that, do you see a lot of people coming through and saying, look, it just takes over my life?
Sure, absolutely. It is fundamentally, when you look at the stresses that people are facing, it's family stress, which is you work too much, you're away from family. And then it's work stress, which is I need more of you. I need more of you faster. I need more of you to be more available. And when we're thinking about coping with that, how do cause that shift in the mentality? I think part of it is going in from a business approach. At this meeting with the Ministry of Health, one of the participants mentioned, you know, when you can talk numbers about how much untreated mental health costs us, then I think employers start listening. There are estimates. Forbes just had an article that it costs around $1 trillion a year in mental health and in a loss due to mental health related reasons. And that's a difficult number. I know sometimes you're going to get some pushback. Well, what does that actually mean? And it's difficult because there are direct costs. These are the things like people calling in sick, when family life spills over into work and you have distracted employees, when you have medications, when you have hospitalization. Those are those direct costs. But then there are the indirect costs of things like lost productivity due to employee disengagement. You have employees sitting there 8, 10, 12 hours a day, but are they productive? And I think the more we can have concrete numbers associated with what a loss means and what mental health, how it actually affects companies, then I think they'll be much more willing to engage on this issue.
We're talking to Chastity O'Connell. She is mental health counsellor at the Human Relations Institute and clinics. And now, we do take sick days off if we have the flu, but should we also be taking mental days off when we're not feeling mentally well? We discuss that next on Dubai Today with me, Sally Musa, on Dubai Eye 103.8. Are you hoarding your sick days? If you're like most Dubai workaholics, see, you probably refuse to take a day off unless an unexpected illness forces you to stay home or see a doctor. That's probably also your boss's view. But those days aren't just for when you're feeling under the weather. Sometimes it's just as important to take a mental health day, a day off solely dedicated to giving your psychological and emotional health some TLC to break away from the draining stress of everyday life. Stress which over time could lead to major health problems if not properly dealt with. Now, we want to know from you, do you think that mental health days should be something that we can take? Or maybe you're a boss who thinks, no, that is a load of garbage. People are going to take advantage of that and it is not going to work. It's going to affect my productivity. Message in on 4001 or on the Dubai Eye app. But for now, we've got a caller in on 04-423-1010. Hello, good afternoon.
Hey there.
Hi. You've got a question for Chastity. Hello.
Hello?
Yes, hi. You've got a question for Chastity.
Oh, I didn't have a question.
Yes. I believe your comment was around anxiety and depression from family and friends. And
it's kind of dealing with it, because when you don't suffer from it, you have kind of a guilt of not suffering from it. Like, you can be having a really good day and then all these people around you are suffering from anxiety and depression and having a bad day, and then it's kind of a guilt. So I see that anxiety and depression can be kind of passed down. If that makes sense, because you feel guilty to be happy around these kind of people.
Completely, because you're thinking, you know, why am I the only one who's happy here and everybody else is depressed? And then they see you, it's like, why are you happy and we're all not feeling so great?
Yeah.
What can be behind that, Chastity? How do you get around it?
I think what is difficult about when you're in a good place in life and you see those suffering around you is the reality that you might be hoping that they might be reaching out for their own help, that they might look for ways to try and navigate around this. But even that brings up a host of issues. It's to what degree are they aware that they're suffering with symptoms of depression or symptoms of anxiety? And then it brings up this issue that's pervasive through our discussions about Mental Health Day, which is, you know, how do you seek help? Where's the stigma? And how will that stigma play a role in other relationships? So it is, you know, that relationship between the family and the person that is doing well and not afflicted, you know, how do you navigate that brings up a host of other issues.
Does that help you there?
Yeah, a little bit.
In terms of what to think about. I mean, you know, you still want to be happy, though. You don't want to be feeling down in the dumps, because surrounding yourself with the people, particularly if they're family, that can be very difficult because you can't get away from that. It is something that their energy is going to start affecting you. Is that what you're feeling?
Yeah, for definite. Like, I can be like, hey, how are you? And they say, oh, I'm having a really rubbish day today. I'm feeling down. Like, they know that they have the problem. I'm feeling down. And then they question, hey, how are you today? And you don't want to say, oh, I'm really good. I've had a promotion at work. So I naturally would say, yeah, I'm just okay. And then the more you tell yourself you're just okay, you're kind of bringing your own energy down to kind of reach their energy.
Sure. So looking for that, you know, there's a couple of things there. There's that support issue where, you know, you've had these incredible things that are happening to you, and who do you go to? And also the reality that, you know, how their experience is affecting you, and how to set up a kind of permeable boundary where you can still have their relationship and that support, but in a way that, you know, doesn't allow it to bring you down. What are some of the things you can do to prevent that, to put that permeable boundary up? And it is a challenge. It really is. And it's partially looking at, you know, what are some of the thoughts that are affecting you when you find yourself self-censoring and not sharing those experiences, and trying to, you know, honor the fact that you have these things that are going on, and you know, being able to share that with them and seeing what happens.
So do share your happiness. I think that's the message, isn't it? To just share that happiness and hope that it impacts them in a positive way as well.
Sure. It's in being mindful of what their position is. Mm. And it's not about, you know, cheerleading and bragging or those kinds of things. But, you know, if you find that this pattern of you censoring yourself, testing the waters and seeing what happens when you raise the reality that something really positive has happened for you, and seeing what their reaction is. Because sometimes we do that. Sometimes that, I don't want to talk about it, might be, you know, our own self-censoring, that, you know, we're trying to protect them. We don't want them to feel bad. Well, let's see what happens when I mention this positive thing happening. And we might find that we're surprised that maybe it's something that they can also be happy for us, you know, not it be happy or at least appreciate that moment with us.
Thank you so much for the call. Great to talk to you.
Thank you.
Bringing up a really interesting issue there, that it can be the other way around. It can be somebody else bringing your own happiness down, and how do you deal with that? But Chastity, we were talking just now about taking a mental health day, taking that time out from work to make sure you are feeling well in your mind, and feeling that more balanced and not so overworked. And, you know, you talked before we went to the break about the cost that it can have on the workplace, on your employer, when you are not feeling right. So should we be taking mental health days?
Well, that's a great question, and it brings up it's a complex answer, in that oftentimes the question is, you know, the response could be something like, yes, it is so important to take care of our mental health. Physical, when we think about a physical problem that we would have, we have no problem maybe seeing a doctor about it and reaching out and doing something to try and remedy that problem. But it's when it's problems related to our mental and psychological well-being, we second guess ourselves, we're really hesitant about it. And if we look at where that hesitation comes from, you know, is it about, you know, what the stigma might be at work saying, you know, honestly, I need a mental health day. And how does that impact us? There's some serious considerations there. There is a big stigma related to mental health, and disclosing that could carry consequences. So I want to be mindful of the reality that, yes, we need to be taking care of our mental health, but we need to do it in a way that is still going to be in line with the honor and culture of our workplace.
We're discussing whether it's a good idea to take a mental health day. You do it for sick days when you've hurt yourself, you've got the flu, whatever it is. But would you take a mental health day? Would you give your employees a mental health day? We are, in fact, speaking to Chastity O'Connell. She is mental health counsellor at the Human Relations Institute and Clinics. We left off talking about, or asking rather, whether we should be taking mental health days. This is a big topic. It's been discussed before, and it is very much something when you, as a counsellor, you're talking to people who are overworked. It's something that you wish would be implemented, isn't it?
I absolutely think that people need to take the time to devote care, attention to their mental health well-being. It is such a serious problem, and it's pervasive. It touches across all cultures, all nationalities. We're all affected by this.
All occupations.
And all occupations, absolutely. And so when we're thinking about mental health and really, you know, if you so there's statistics that 50 to 70% of most GP visits have some type of psychological basis. And keeping in mind that mental health, we talk about mental health and we think about the mind, but the body is incredibly affected by that. Mental health symptoms can manifest in the way of headaches, in stomach, digestive issues, and of course there's also the long-term implications on our immune system. There is, although we talk about mental health and trying to make it as important as physical health, the reality is they are so intricately connected, you can't distinguish between the two. So I think it's important to emphasize just how important it is to take care of our minds.
We've got some really interesting messages coming in. One, no name on this one, saying this is from Mustafa, saying it will be gravely misused. There should be some mechanism at the office to talk about mental stress. My organization does provide a helpline for employees feeling stressed out. You don't hear about that a lot, do you, of organizations providing that kind of help, a helpline for employees? That is a great step forward.
Absolutely. In fact, there's quite a few organizations and companies in Dubai that provide a kind of helpline, a talk line. There are some that offer full employee assistance programs where they can take advantage of therapy. They can attend workshops that talk about things like how to manage marital conflict. Marital conflict has a big impact on work productivity. How to manage childhood difficulties, parenting seminars. So companies are starting to take this seriously and seeing the tangible connection between mental health and work productivity. So absolutely.
Rebecca texted in a little bit earlier saying, being mentally ill is worse than being physically ill. Recovery from a physical illness is quick. Recovery from a mental illness is a long process and may not ever be cured and is absolutely debilitating. Mental illness manifests itself in many physical ways and absolutely deserves a sick day to recuperate. It's important to recognize that having a bad day is not the same as having a mental illness. So the sick day allowance is not abused.
Absolutely. Rebecca, I just want to say thank you so much for your post. It is tremendously accurate, and it's wonderful to hear from people's own personal experiences. There's something you mentioned in there that I think is so important to emphasize, and that's the reality that words like depression, anxiety, OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder, they have been misappropriated in a lot of ways into common speak to such an extent that, you know, it hasn't helped the understanding the severity of those illnesses. Sometimes you'll hear people say, "I'm depressed," and although, you know, experiencing sadness, I don't want to make light of that, but how you referred to the reality that having a bad day is not the same as having a mental illness. Feeling depressed is not the same thing as clinical depression is so important, and I appreciate you raising that issue and definitely championing that on to all of you out there.
How do we know the difference, though? How do we know when it's us? Sometimes we got a message in yesterday. We were also talking about mental health and mental health first aid. A message from John, who was talking about his wife who had had postnatal depression, mm-hmm. but she didn't even know it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so how do you even know? How do you think, okay, hold on a minute, maybe it's not just overwork. Maybe I've fallen now into depression and I'm experiencing a lot of anxiety. How do you know it's that?
Absolutely. This is part of the reason why it's such an exciting time right now, in that raising awareness of what it means, of what mental health is, what is mental illness, and encouraging those to reach out and, you know, contact, you know, a clinic, reach out to the school counselor and sort of understand, you know, is what I'm experiencing part of what is somewhat is expected within what the situational factors are going on in my life, or is this something that is not? And as this push goes to raise awareness about mental health, I think it will become easier to have that detected. You see a shift where GPs are now giving psychological screeners, especially for women after delivery. Hopefully it's changing more and more. I know in other countries, that's standard, that after the baby is born, they're issued a psychological screener just to detect for things like depression and anxiety, because we know untreated postnatal depression, untreated postnatal anxiety has an impact on development of the baby, long-term implications. So it is so important to catch mental illness early.
So when you talk about a screener after they've had the baby, is that like a chat with a psychologist? What does that involve exactly?
Oh, great question. It looks at, some of them are like just a 9-question check-in on how do you feel that you're coping? And it's really simple. It's not invasive. Some of them are 9 questions. So it's not as intimidating, I think, as most people would think or have the misconception about what it means to screen for mental illness. And this is done in the GP's office. Nurses can do it. So it really is something. They're being mindful of the fact that not everybody is going to go see a psychologist or be aware enough that they are experiencing something and their life could feel better. I think this is a key point, is that sometimes with mental health challenges, the onset is relatively slowly. And so people just find that stress is compounding. Life is getting harder. It's getting harder to meet deadlines. It's getting harder to, you know, attend to the children. It is more difficult to keep up with social activities. And before they know it, they find themselves isolating and not directly. And so you're in this place and you think, how in the heck did I get here? And how do I get out? But without really realizing that something is wrong and that life could be better. This is what is so important about mental health, is that the way it takes over your perception of life, that things aren't going to get better, that if you try, you're not going to be good at it. And that's what's so cruel about mental health.
We are talking mental health today with Chastity O'Connell. She is mental health counselor at the Human Relations Institute and Clinics. A really interesting idea about taking that mental health day. You do take a sick day. People take sick days if they've hurt themselves, they've fallen over, or if they've got the flu, you know that you go to the doctor, you take that sick day, and it's done. But we don't do that for mental health issues if we're experiencing anything. And some great text messages coming in, Chastity. This is really interesting from Susan saying, I always allow my children one day off a term for mental health reasons. There are days when you just don't feel like going in. Susan, I think that's great. But I'm seeing, you know, my own kids kind of misusing that and kind of thinking, oh, I don't want to go to school today and I don't want to go in. And even adults, you know, Mustafa texted in earlier saying this would be misused mm-hmm. if you were offering entire days off for people to just go away and feel better. Mm-hmm. So how do you know? How do you know whether someone's faking it or if it's real?
Absolutely. Those are key issues and that you want to make sure that there's support for people that need it, but that it's not misused. And interestingly enough, with children, you know, you don't want to inadvertently reinforce that. So when looking at taking a mental health day, well, I'll just chat a minute for about the children. So you're looking at whether or not this is part of their behavior. Are they attending school regularly? Are they on task? Because what you don't want is to miss a problem. Because if children are avoiding school and are reluctant to go to school, then it's important to understand why. What is behind that? Is it really just that the past month has been exhausting? They've been booked up with after-school activities during the week and birthday parties and tennis and ballet on the weekends, and they can't get out of bed. That is very different than children that may be struggling with some issue at school. So you don't want to use that and possibly miss something important going on. And with adults, it's also important, again, you want to make sure that that mental health day, that time is there for folks that really need it. And when thinking about whether or not it's a mental illness or whether you're having just a really bad day, there are some things to keep in mind. It's to what extent you are able to function. So one of the things we look at is functionality. Have you been able to perform at the same way that you have been, or is there a change in your level of performance? And we also look at things related to duration. So how long has this been going on and how it's impacting your life? So if you find that, you know, it's a really stressful time and you have a lot of commitments, reports that need to be written, soccer games that need to be attended to, family life that needs attention, and being excessively available to your boss, are there other things you can do to prioritize those issues or cut back on the weekends? However, it becomes an issue when you find that you are unable to maintain and cope with the stressors, the new stressors that are incoming. Earlier in the show, I mentioned that mental health is not just about the absence of illness, but can you cope with the ups and downs? And I think this is really important to impart this message that we all have ups and downs, and we all naturally develop coping strategies with how to regulate those ups and downs.
So is that about resilience?
There's resilience in there, and there's just being adaptive. So stress, for example, we need stress. There's eustress, which is good stress, and there's distress, which is when the stress becomes dysfunctional, when it becomes maladaptive. And so we use these words adaptive and maladaptive, meaning there's healthy ways we cope, which are things like I'm really stressed, I'm going to go out for a walk. I'm really stressed, I'm going to walk away from the screen. I'm really angry, I'm not going to send this email right now. And then there's maladaptive ways of coping, which is I'm really stressed, I'm going to go shout at someone. I'm really stressed, I'm going to go drink the problem away, or I'm really stressed, I'm just going to stop and avoid everything. Avoidance is really important. So when we're talking about that school issue, like trying to tie it all together, what are you avoiding? Are you not going to school because you're avoiding something? Are you not going to work because you're avoiding something? Or are you moving towards something else? So by staying at home with your kids, are you having some fun with them, playing in the pool, taking them, you know, doing some painting? And the same thing with mental health. Are you staying home and binge watching Netflix? That's not a mental health day.
We're talking about mental health days. We take the 6 days, but what about the mental health days? Should we be taking them? And of course, Chastity, there is a right way to be taking a mental health day. We're going to discuss that next. Lots of your messages have been coming in. And Chastity, I want to bring you back. We've been talking about mental health days, whether we should be taking them. The answer is yes. How do you take them? That is something that we will get to. But we have, in fact, had a call on 0442 310 10. It is somebody who didn't want to come on air, but she has quite a story to tell. Now, she says that she has been married to her husband for 5 years, close to his family. She has a child from a previous relationship, but they moved here from the United States. They've been here for about 5 years now. And 5 months after marrying, they did move here, and he had a very high-flying job. But he got demoted. He started becoming distant, very aggressive, shouting, goes out and does what he wants with his friends. They haven't had a physical relationship for over 2 years. And she thinks that her husband is experiencing depression, but he has just completely shut her out. He is not talking to her. They haven't talked for over 2 months. He has turned to alcohol, unfortunately, as well. There's a lot going on there. He's even cut her off from the finances. She is wondering, when does she walk away? She's been told several times by him to just leave. When does she walk away? She thinks that she can help her husband.
That's a difficult situation. And, you know, I appreciate what was brought up earlier as well, is you have people in your life that you love and care about and have a relationship. Like someone brought up earlier, you know, I have friends that experience family that experience depression and anxiety, and they bring me down. And so in looking at this situation, it's a very sensitive one, in the sense that there is a marriage here. And at the same time, one key question would be, what was the marriage like before this? What was the quality of the marriage like? And in trying to distill whether or not what the husband has experienced, what he has experienced, is in fact symptomatic of some type of depression or anxiety, or if it's something that has been going on in the marriage for a long time and it's now to a breaking point. So this is that key question of getting a more complete picture of what their relationship was like, what brought them together in the first place, and also looking at how you are understanding what you think you might be able to do, and how you might be able to do that, and the extent to which is that realistic. So there's some tough questions there to consider. What was it like? How do you think you can help your husband?
But it sounds like a terrible kind of situation to be in.
Absolutely.
I mean, to a point where, you know, your husband has said to you, I think you should leave, or it's over. They haven't had a physical relationship in 2 years. Is it something where she really just needs to walk away for her own well-being and just allow him to go away and to seek help on his own? She's tried to give him self-help books. She's tried to get him to see somebody, but clearly he's not willing to acknowledge what's going on. But, you know, is it time for her to just go for her own sake?
Sure. It's a great question. What I would recommend in this context, the reality is, it sounds like she's undergone a very tumultuous period of time. It's been extremely difficult. So my question is, how does this difficult relationship, this tremendously painful, you know, having someone tell you that they don't want to be in a marriage with you, that must hurt so much. And so what I would want to know is, how is this affecting you? Because what I would imagine is that there is a lot of pain and a lot of secondary secondary issues that have happened to you, and encouraging you to talk with someone, talk with a friend, reach out and try and understand your own process through trying to help him. I wonder if your needs have gone ignored. Who's been caring for you? Who's been looking after you? You mentioned financial support. Who's taking care of you? Those are all key questions that deserve an answer. And certainly, you know, I can appreciate calling in and asking the question, how do you help your husband, or whether or not to stay in the relationship and it, with someone who is pulling away. But from a therapeutic perspective, my concern is you. You're the one that's reaching out for the call, and you reached out to call, and so I want to make sure that you're being looked after and you're taking the steps you need to look after yourself as well.
She definitely, I think, needs to see someone to answer exactly the questions that you have been asking just now. So I hope that helps, and I hope that's a situation that definitely gets sorted out for you. Now, we left off in the last hour talking a lot about in World Mental Health Day. It's the 25th anniversary. This year, their theme is all about mental health in the workplace, and particularly how the workplace is impacting how we feel about ourselves, how good is our mental health after working and trying to meet all the KPIs. A lot of us have, you know, got those KPIs coming out of our ears. But, you know, something that we left off with is how to detect whether it is real, whether you really need a mental health day or not. But another great point that you raised, Chastity, is how to properly take a mental health day. How do we do it?
Well, I want to start off with saying, as I mentioned before, as enjoyable as it may feel, binge watching Netflix is not the answer to a mental health. I know. It's hard. That's something you can say for the weekends. And you can schedule some time in later in the evening to do that. You know, I don't want to knock Netflix. At the same time, Mental Health Day, although we use the word mental again, is designed to take care of your body, your mind, and your spirit. There's a really important shift in how we understand mental health and the importance of spirituality, whatever that may be for people. So, and what I mean by spirituality doesn't necessarily mean religion, but it means that inner meaning, that sense of purpose, who you are as an individual, your identity, what gets you up in the morning, and revisiting that. And so taking the time, body, exercise, going for a walk, and it doesn't have to be something super strenuous, but looking at things like going for that walk, going paddle boarding if that's something you've been wanting to do, taking care of your body, taking care of your mind, taking some time to write. Meditation has had enormous amount of research behind it, and some people are daunted by that. So if meditation is not your thing, there's journaling, there's writing, there's self-exploration, there's guided self-exploration. So you're looking at, what do you value? What's important to you? What kind of person do you want to be? And then taking care of that spirit part, which is the, what, you know, what do you want? Here's an exercise for you. What do you want, you know, read at your funeral? You know, that what kind of person you are, you know, that you were a loving mother, a devoted father, a, you know, dedicated employee. What are the things that you want said at your funeral? What do you want written on your epitaph? And are you living in a way that supports that? Because often we are swept up in the day-to-day, the responding to the WhatsApps, the looking at how many likes you get on social media, the meeting of deadlines, which are important. So I don't want to diminish all of those things. But I want to reemphasize the reality that we are trying to live a life at the same time, and trying to do that deliberately and with purpose.
So stay away from the screen, basically.
Yes.
You've got to. Do you know what? Sometimes I just turn my phone off completely.
Mm, that's excellent.
No, but this is the scary bit, right? I find myself, I just keep opening it, still looking at it, trying to look at it, and it's off. And I do that far, far too often. And it kind of scares me. I think, okay, I really, really need to get away from screens.
Sure.
It's just, it's vital. It's something that we all have to do. But we're talking mental health in the workplace. That's one of the topics that we're discussing today. We're also talking about relationships. We're talking about marriage, anxiety, depression, grief. Whatever you've got an issue about, Chastity is here to help. We've got Chastity O'Connell here. She is mental health counsellor at the Human Relations Institute and clinics. We got an interesting text in earlier, Chastity, if you remember, from Mustafa talking about mental health days. They would be misused, but he was talking about the other things that his organisation is doing. We've got Mustafa on the line. Hello, Mustafa.
Hi, Sally.
Great to have you on with us. I loved your text because you're kind of saying, well, you know what? Mental health days, people might not show up just for whatever reason, but actually there are other ways that your organization is doing things for mental health. Tell us about that.
Absolutely. So thank you for the opportunity. I would like to, you know, go back to what Chastity was mentioning in the conversation about mechanisms in place that organizations can have to make sure that an individual needs that support. And I think that's where my organization comes in as to what we do with regards to our people here. Is not only we do have an international helpline for our global employees where, and if there's anybody who's feeling a bit down due to all the issues that you both discussed, could be marital issues, could be work-related stress, or could be health issues, so on and so forth. The list is long. So they could actually call in you know, a team within the organization and share whatever they are going through, in confidence, of course, and then get advice on that. In addition to that, what we also have in place is a program with the local insurance provider that if anybody does need professional help on the ground, they could go to a hospital for consultation for any you know, psychiatric issues or anything related in that space, anything to do with mental health, they could opt for that and they could get an advice from a professional if they don't wish to, again, talk to somebody within the organization. So these things have been made available, which I believe are, you know, options that whenever somebody feels that they need to go out and talk to someone without, you know, having the stigma or the, you know, the image factor in place, I think this plays out really well.
I mean, this is not something that you hear about often, Mustafa, within an organization, but obviously you work within a large corporation where this is possible.
That is true, I guess. Again, you know, I don't hear it often, but I'm really glad that we have that as a program within this organization that I work for. And it's something really appreciated by the, you know, by my co-workers, and something that we value a lot.
Do you feel like it's something that really ups your own productivity and your desire and engagement to be at work?
It does. It does. You know, not only for the fact that, you know, it's a feel-good factor that you know that the company is with you. They're not just treating you as people who are there to generate revenue, etc., but they treat you as a part of the larger family, and they're providing this support. And it feels great to be back into work every single day knowing that you work for an organization which has got your back.
Wow, that is incredible. And to hear you talk about the place that you work and with such esteem and respect, it's excellent that your organization is doing this for you. I think what you've brought up are two key issues, which is this talk line. People underestimate the importance of early detection when it comes to mental health issues. It is so important if you can catch them early and you can implement coping strategies and techniques to mitigate some of these challenges. And you mentioned another important issue, which is insurance. Having health insurance that covers mental health treatment is incredible. And so you can see quickly how some of these issues are systemic, and how do you provide early detection support, and how do you make sure that people get the help that you need. But I am so impressed by the way you speak about your organization. I'm sure a lot of organizations would love to have their employees talking about them the way that you're talking about your own.
Mustafa, great.
I hope so.
Yes. Great to chat with you. Thank you so much for
the call. Likewise. Thank you. Have a good day.
You too.
Thank you.
You know, talking about insurance, it's not that common to have mental health covered insurance.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that this will be a change? Is this something that we're going to be seeing changing as we see like you said at the top of the show, the bottom line is influenced by whether we take care of our employees' mental health or not.
I hope so. At the same time, there are economic realities. And I think if people are looking at the short term, then it's sometimes difficult to justify mental health treatment in the short term. At the same time, the long game, the reality of what it does for employee productivity, what it does in terms of having people at work more often and more productive, you can't argue with the facts and figures.
You really can't, can you? Something else that is going to be making you feel very, very good is a tips and toes treatment worth 500 dirhams. That is what we are giving away today, thanks to the Pink Ladies Games. I like this message that's come in for that particular competition. It's from Manisha. She says, I work day and night as a full-time employee in a high-stress environment, and as a mum to a 2-year-old toddler, not to mention caring for my husband, I would truly appreciate the treatment. Unfortunately, you're going to go into a draw like everybody else, but I think she makes a great point. She's a mum. She's got a toddler. And while, you know, it's all sounds great and everything to say, I'm going to take a day off, a mental health day off, some of us aren't so lucky, particularly no. Mums.
Absolutely, absolutely. There's a lot of pressure on moms.
You can't stop. You're not allowed to stop.
No. And
how do you deal with that?
Oh, that's such a great question. And it's a hard one. Where do we even begin? Part of it is looking at, there's two components to it. There's the reality of, you know, mom expectations, what are moms expecting of themselves? And I do think we're really hard on ourselves. I think we expect us to be patient all the time and productive all the time and have things ready and look good and put together. And that is not sustainable. And it's important to, you know, pick our battles. And so there's part of that internal piece, which is what are our own expectations of ourselves and, you know, that element of perfectionism. And then there's the external piece in terms of what do work environments do to support moms. I was speaking with someone at a nursery several months ago, and she had started a mama return to work program. I can't remember the name of the company, but I thought this is the most incredible thing I have ever heard. And it was about easing that transition. If mothers are still breastfeeding, giving them rooms in order which they can do that, you know, helping them integrate, and certainly being mindful of what it is like to be a mom returning to work at 8 weeks with an 8-week-old baby, and what that means for your sleep, what that means for your ability to focus at work. And I think that's incredible, because ultimately, who benefits from that? The companies benefit, as well as the child. And yes, you may think, Is it necessary that, you know, from a corporate perspective, is it necessary to do the things to take care of someone's children? But when you look at society and you look at juvenile detention rates, if you look at prison rates and you look at the untreated disorders and the impact on a societal perspective, of course, I'm not saying that, you know, just because a mom isn't available as much that her children are going to end up in prison, but there are connections, and it's really important to impart this message that caring for our moms is caring for society.
And really, if you don't have it, you can't give it, can
yes.
you, at the end of the day?
Absolutely. I want to give a shout out to the dads, too.
Yes.
So I do not want to ignore the importance.
Some very hardworking dads out
absolutely.
There.
Absolutely. Thank you, daddies.
We've got with us Chastity O'Connell, mental health counselor at the Human Relations Institute and Clinics. If you've got a question for Chastity, please do send it in 4001 or on the Dubai Eye app. You know the studio number. If you want to get in touch, it's 0442 2 3 10 10. We've got lots of questions coming in. One about a 15-year-old who refuses to talk. One concerning a daughter who's got a friend with autism, and mm-hmm. how do you manage that? We are with you here on Dubai Today. It is On the Couch. We've got Chastity O'Connell, mental health counselor at the Human Relations Institute and Clinics. Lots of questions for you, Chastity, today. Let's go through some of these, and we've also got a caller on the line. We've got one here saying, I've got a question about my nephew. He is a smart, kind, productive boy, and he's almost 15 years old now, and his problem is that he doesn't talk to family except my dad and brothers. He doesn't talk to me or my sister or my mum, and she thinks that his mother has OCD. So it's a very long text, but is it just him being 15 years old, or do you think that there is something else going on for him?
Well, I think because it's only a snapshot of what's going on, some of the questions I would ask you are, what's behavior like at school? Is he interacting with other classmates, with other teachers? And what are interactions like at sporting events or other social events? And if there's those interactions there, then it doesn't look like it's across all environments. And so those are some of the things we look for when it comes to mental health, especially with younger ones, how to understand if what you're seeing is a part of the environment that they're in right now, or if it's something that stays with them from environment to environment, and then that might suggest that more might be going on. Another question I would have for you is, what is he doing when you're trying to talk to him? So if he is in a phone and an iPad and a gaming console and you're trying to strike up a conversation, that's good information to know as well. So there is, at this stage of development, there is some, you know, developmentally appropriate pushback that you might expect from teens. But asking you the question, what is he doing? Are you trying to take his attention away from something else? Not to say that you shouldn't be doing that, but understanding, you know, is it he's walking by, you've said hello, and he looks at you and walks away? That's different than being totally immersed in a game. So,
okay, so I hope that helps. And you can call in on 044-23-1010 if you have a question. Someone who's done just that is Mariam. Hello, Mariam.
Hello, how are you?
Good, thanks. What's your question to Chastity?
My question is that basically, first of all, thank you for tapping into this topic. It does not get nearly as enough awareness as possible. And then being a 26-year-old in this era, you can say, being a millennial at this point, there are a lot of people my age who have like what is being called now a quarter-life crisis. So you have... And it's so real, like, because at first when you get, like, when you graduate school and stuff like that, you kind of go through it with, like, what I want to do with my life now and stuff like that. And then after you graduate university, you start your work, and then you just find yourself in this position, like, what's my purpose in life? Like, just finding that purpose and wanting to know, like, what's your, like, long-term plan, or what do you do from here? Like, do you want to stay in a job from 9 to 5 like your parents did? Or do you want to be, an entrepreneur and have your own thing? Do you want to travel? Do you want to have a full-time job? Do you want to study again? I don't know if it's, like, as serious as some of, like, the other issues that have been pointed out on the show, but it's something that definitely keeps me and, like, a lot of people my age, from people I've been talking to, it just keeps me up at night when you're just thinking about you really, like, don't know what you want to do. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how, what's the first step to take, or, like, how do you deal with this?
Absolutely. Thank you for calling in and raising this issue. I think, you know,
I love that. Quarter life crisis.
I love it too.
I've called it in the past, Mariam, an early life crisis. Because you do sometimes, you get to that point where you're like, oh my goodness, what am I going to do with my life? And you're still in your early 20s.
Absolutely. And we're bombarded with potentials. And what I mean by this is that when I grew up, I didn't know what I didn't know. And now, you know, I look at the millennials growing up in an age where you are aware of so many people that are doing the most.
Too many options.
Yes, where so many people are doing so many amazing things. And I think there's an important part to realize that part of that is for public consumption. And so there's the realities of what it's like to be growing up in a pervasive internet environment. And then there's the reality of what's going on internally. You mentioned this word, you mentioned purpose and plan, and I'm thinking identity. From a developmental perspective, identity is a lifelong, it's a lifelong journey. And so at the same time, you're like, okay, that's great. So what do I do about that now? And, you know, what do you want to do with your life? But this, I think this challenge gets amplified by the social media issue. And I think part of it is just being aware and looking at the things that you are saying to yourself when you're up at night and how can you address those issues. So if you're up at night and you're like, everybody is doing everything that's amazing. There's a joke I have. Pinterest is where wonderful intentions go to die because there's so many amazing things that you could be, should be, would be doing if you had time.
So a major FOMO, major fear of missing out.
Yes, it's funny you mentioned that. I'm actually doing research with the American University of Sharjah on FOMO because of this very reason.
And hit me up, please.
Oh, good. I would love to do so. So what I would say is to try and, you know, give you some things to take away from our chat is when you're up at night, what are those thoughts? Write them down. And it's important to write things down because sometimes we can start to think too much and analyze. There's a great word that the research uses, which is ruminate. If you can Google that, ruminate, which means there's two types of thinking processes. Okay, there's a lot of types, but two things to think about. One is ruminating and problem solving. And oftentimes the mind is kind of funny because we think if we think about things over and over again and we analyze it and look at possibilities, we think we're actively doing something about that. But it's a trick. We are actually just
going around in circles.
We are,
we just overthinking?
We are overthinking. We're going around in circles. So a little quick test to determine, are you ruminating or are you problem solving, is after you're done with it, do you feel better or worse? If you feel better, then you are problem solving. You are looking at an issue. Well, I'm really stressed because I'm supposed to be, you know, I made a plan that I was going to run this marathon in a year's time. And so far, I have not even bought a pair of tennis shoes. Tomorrow, I will go buy a pair of tennis shoes. That is problem solving. Ruminating is, I said I was going to run this marathon and other friends said they were going to do it, but I don't know if I really want to do it. Oh my goodness, am I going to let them down? And before you know it, you're snowballing into questions of,
exactly.
Oh, I never finish what I start. Oh, it's difficult.
Start to get anxiety over it.
Yes, and it is a year away. So two questions, am I ruminating or am I problem solving? And looking at, can I do something about this now? Can I make a decision about something now?
And is there an action you can take?
Is
there a tick that you can put in a box somewhere?
Absolutely.
That is going to make you feel better and you go, that's done. I've dealt with it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And also looking at, is this important for me? Is this something that is going to give my life meaning and purpose and make me feel like I'm working towards something, or is this something I'm doing so I can post? And I think those will sort of help channel our behavior to where we are feeling like we're being purposeful rather than
breaking it down into smaller pieces to deal with rather than one huge picture.
Absolutely. And you said that, I didn't. So you already have some great ideas probably. I think, but yeah.
Thank you so much.
Oh, you are welcome. I think you're bringing up a phenomenal issue that is going to touch so many people's hearts and minds. So thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for the call, Mariam.
Really helped. Thank you. Have a great day.
You too. You know, it's a great problem to have, essentially, to have that many choices in life when you've just finished school or finished university and then you're looking at what you're going to do, what are your options. But you've got to break it down into smaller chunks that you can control and that you can deal with. But we've got plenty of other questions that have come in. This one is from Anna. Great question. This one is saying, my mum has a depression from being forced to get married to my dad at 14 years old. She's living in a separate house in summer and travels in winter to the US with my sister. They gave her a card and to do some things that she probably shouldn't be doing. She's fine, but the month she has no choice to stay with my dad, the problem starts. They're clashing in anger. So there's a lot of problems going on in this relationship. So we need to give her a strong medicine to calm down. That can't be good. She doesn't like to see doctors and believe only certain drugs will help her, which are far too strong for her. So whatever annoys her, she blames my dad, regardless if it's related to her or not.
In this issue, I think I'm struck by two things that, and this, you were saying it's the daughter that's writing in, and certainly feeling some, you know, stress and responsibility for looking after mom, and that's a lot to take on. So I just want to emphasize that point, to, you know, look at how to sort of ask the question and make sure that you're taking care of yourself as well. And with consideration of mom, as far as managing anger and relaxing, there are so many non-medical, pharmacological treatments or non-drug treatments that we can do, that we can use in therapy to help manage those intense emotions. And in fact, they're incredibly effective. There's a lot of research behind them.
So definitely consult with a psychiatrist,
yes.
Consult with a psychologist,
yes.
And look at those options for her.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's incredible. Some of the simple things that you can do with regard to breathing exercises, things that like progressive muscle relaxation. And I think sometimes people underestimate their effectiveness just because they think it's breathing. I already know how to breathe. Or they think about progressive muscle relaxation. How is this actually helping me? And like anything, it needs practice. So don't be daunted by the fact that it's not an instant fix at first, but it is incredibly sustainable. It's the stuff that you can take with you wherever you go, and you don't have to worry about prescriptions and those sort of things.
We're in the last couple of moments before we let you go, Chastity. We've got Chastity O'Connell from Mental Health. She is the mental health counselor at the Human Relations Institute and Clinics. We had a text earlier from a listener in Abu Dhabi. She says, I live in Abu Dhabi and I'm experiencing some of the symptoms that you've been discussing today. Would you be kind enough to recommend a good psychologist or a good clinic in Abu Dhabi?
Absolutely. One of the things that we're trying to do from a psychological, I guess, clinician perspective is work with other clinics. And so one of those that we worked with is ACPN, which is the American Center for Psychiatry and Neurology. And they have a branch in Abu Dhabi. And you can just Google ACPN and have a look. And you can also have a look at some of the clinics that come up. And don't be afraid to call and ask. You know, if we can't help, we want to make sure that people get access to help. So even at HRI, if we can't help you directly, we want to point you in the right direction.
Okay, last question, if we can rapid fire this one before we go. This one is asking about how good is a silent treatment effective? How effective is it in mending a husband-wife relationship?
Well, the silent treatment, my first question would be for you would be, what do you define? What do you mean by silent treatment? What does that look like for you? We know from some of the excellent marital research that's been going on with Dr. John Gottman that, you know, building in some time, a mutually agreed upon 20-minute or 40-minute period of time to self-soothe, to calm down in the heat of an argument, can definitely help promote a more constructive dialogue. And so, in thinking about the silent treatment, how long are you looking at? And the most important thing about the silent treatment or self-soothe is coming back to have the conversation. So you don't want to have this break and not revisit what brought you to the silent treatment in the first place. You want to make sure that you're in the mental space, which includes calming down and being in a place to not only say what you need to say in a constructive way, but also receive what the other person is saying. So that's really important as well.
That's it. That's the end of the show for us. Chastity O'Connell, mental health counsellor at the Human Relations Institute and Clinics. Thank you so much for today.
Oh, you are so welcome.
Your
it
first
has been a pleasure.
With yes. us. Yes.
Yes.
Thank you for sharing your expertise. Just such an insightful couple of hours. And thank you to everybody who's texted in. Don't forget to join us again.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.